Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly.
Ready to soundtrack your summer? With Red Bull Summer All Day Play, you choose a playlist that fits your summer vibe the best. Are you a festival fanatic, a deep end DJ, a road dog, or a trail mixer? Just add a song to your chosen playlist and put your summer on track. Red Bull Summer All Day Play. Red Bull gives you wings. Visit redbull.com/brightsummerahead to learn more. See you this summer.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found Nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Where is Daredevil?
A minor.
Don't miss the return of Marvel Television's Daredevil Born Again.
So what's next?
I've been liberated.
We're gonna take this city back.
Over medicated.
In an all-new season, now streaming only on Disney Plus.
They're hunting us. It's time we started hunting them.
I can work with that.
This should be tons of fun.
Marvel Television's Daredevil Born Again, now streaming only on Disney Plus.
This is the High Hopes Podcast.
High Hopes.
On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
The crowd was singing high hopes, smiling through a broken nose. Oh, high hopes, high hopes.
I feel a little less alone.
Yo. Edition of the High Hopes Podcast, sponsored by Miller Lite, official partner of the Philadelphia Phillies. Tastes like Miller time, Philadelphia. Celebrate responsibly. I would like to thank those other teams for ending their silly little seasons so we can focus on the 10-3 Phillies since Mattingly came in. Let's freaking go, baby. How about it? How about it? We're hitting, we're pitching, Fritzy. We got a baseball team all of a sudden. The summer is not canceled. It's back on. How you doing, pal?
We kicked the snot out of the Rockies. Yeah, the Rockies are a good team. Nah, Rockies are all right. Rockies are all right. I think they're more
better
serviceable.
Than they were last year, that's for sure, yeah.
More serviceable than in years past. So what if the A's bullpen had like an 11 ERA and they don't have like super great starting pitching? We're back. We're back. No, this is really, however this ends, however good they are, whatever. I mean, they clearly have stabilized this thing. And this is how they looked off last year. I mean, this is who they were. Now, Lizardo getting blown up on Friday was not exactly how he looked last year. But since Mattingly has taken over, I actually think there's been a little bit like more crisp baseball. Like we'll detail it, I'm sure, during this podcast. Like little things that have very, very, very much excited me. But overall, man, they are playing good baseball, and they're getting back to just winning series. We've talked about it ad nauseum on this podcast. They're allergic to sweeping. They don't do it. They may never sweep again. All they do, though, at the 2025 and 2026 Phillies level, is just keep rattling off series wins. And that's all they have to do. All of a sudden, they're now, what, 3 games under 500? They're 4.5 back.
Tied for second in the NL East, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. This is definitely what we thought was going to happen to start the year. The Mets had like a spurt of hotness and then lost 2-3 out in Arizona. So, overall, I feel good. And I am very, very – I didn't really want to do – would you trade Zach Wheeler?
No. It didn't sound like fun. It didn't.
No.
I know that you would have gotten into the potential future that we could have gotten from it.
Yes.
But it would have sucked, man. It would have sucked.
Oh, come on, man. You know, miserable as the months leading up to the deadline would have been miserable. There'd be a
the summer would have been ruined. Like it actually would have ruined the summer. you know.
But they did not ruin the summer. Thank you. And I mean, the offensive stats since Madeline took over,
best in baseball, dude.
First in average, second in home runs, second in slugging. I think they're second in runs scored. I mean, so
Brandon Marsh is leading the league in average. He has 353, dude. I mean, both Harper and Schwarber in the 920, 930, whatever OPS range. Like, the guys have really turned it on, especially those top three. It's really been Harper. I mean, other guys are hitting, but Harper, Schwarber, and Marsh have really. I mean, I was at, like, 3 weeks ago, I was like, they have to have one all-star because that's the way it works, but we're going to have the all-star game in Philly and it's going to be like Sanchez and that's it or something. Like, now we're like, all right, yeah, we got right. Some guys playing at that level. We're looking like we might have some guys in the all-star game here in Philly. It's just like, it's like I feel like I can like take a breath of relief, like a sigh. And it is like good for the Phillies that they've kind of picked it up right when the Flyers and Sixers end. It's kind of like they were allowed to kind of, you know, they make the firing and then they kind of can quietly, you know, get themselves back and be ready for people to start tuning in because now they're going to get a lot more attention. It's just the way it is. So thank God we're not coming into like a 10 games under 500 and being like, well, let's talk about this team. So I thought in general, look, and on Friday, they lose. I think one thing about this team, too, that I've liked to see the last 2 weeks, whatever, since Mangley. They fight, man. Like, they fight in games. I know they lost on Friday, but was it 6-0, 7-2 or whatever it was? They're down. They fight back. They send it to extras. They end up losing. But I've been impressed with, now granted, I don't love that it took, you know, they basically waited around, and we'll get into the Harper comments and all that. But they basically waited around for Topper to get fired and then turned it on. But, you know, they turned it on.
Yeah, I think he was talking more just about like that weekend. You know, like Dombrowski marched the.
He said it multiple times, though. You know,
well, I think that last week. I don't think it was. They weren't on opening day. They weren't we're waiting around for Thompson to get fired.
Of course not.
But I think that last week was a real pressure point for them. And I mean, Dombrowski marched his three most close trusted evaluators through the clubhouse down in Atlanta. Like, I'm sure they were like, "What? Like, well, this is different." So I'm sure there was a little bit of like, what's going to happen here? And they almost just won a resolution. I mean, that's kind of the way that I read it, but I know everyone's on a witch hunt to get Bryce.
So I don't think it's a witch hunt. I just don't love the way he phrased it. Like I think it's possible that Bryce didn't love Topper as a manager as much as we all think. You know what I mean? Like, I think the stock comments were interesting. I think that they really liked Rob Thompson as a human. I think they thought he was a great human. I don't know that they loved him as a manager in the same way we thought they did. You know, I don't. I think Harper's comments, like, it makes my ears perk up that, like, look, you might be right, and maybe it was just a feeling, but it also feels like, you know, they weren't that upset. Harper, at least, I don't know if he was that upset about the change.
Well, certainly, he definitely wants Stott to play more. Obviously, that is key. You could take that as not an ultimate is probably a strong word because I don't think there's like nothing that would happen. Or he could take it as, you know, supporting his friend and showing support for his friend.
Sure.
But yeah, and I was actually glad that Mattingly didn't just do it. You know, I'm glad that.
And that's so sad. The big hit that day, it was like a perfect little, all right, rein it in, big dog.
But then Stott did smoke a ball off a lefty, which is also good to see. And now we've got Sosa back in left field, which is so fun. That's going to definitely not backfire in a big moment. It is crazy for a guy that is so athletic to go out there and just look like he has no idea. Like, he would look like me going out there and playing left field sometimes, where it's just like the read off the bat is so bad. But yeah, no. Yeah. It's certainly the sense that I'm getting from Bryce this year is way more of a, I don't really give a bleep.
Yes.
You know,
I'm just trying to hit bleep hard, you know, like that kind of stuff. Like, it's like, it feels like he's like, obviously we know how he felt about the Dombrowski comments in a certain way and all that, whatever he says, we know how he felt. And I think he's coming on a mission to himself be awesome.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I don't know past that how he feels about everyone, all the whole thing, whatever. But I think he look, and to his credit, he has been awesome. Bryce has been awesome. It's the best Bryce we've seen in a couple of years. Like, best obviously since, it's so early.
Best since, remember before he hurt his hamstring in 24.
Exactly right. Yep.
Because there's a clip of me saying it's the best that Bryce has ever looked. which he was special during that time.
Oh, my God. And thankfully, it was only
2 years ago. The Harper, I think he's playing with more of an edge this year. I think that's obviously
without clear. A doubt. Yeah, no doubt.
So he's playing with more of an edge. And I think this might be what he has to be to lock in that next level that we know that he has in there. You know, Schwarber is way more, I'll be all right. You know, like, I'll get there. Don't you guys. By the way, he's on pace for 63 home runs.
Yeah, dude, what, 4 or 5 straight games or something? He's been
four straight.
Insane. And he's got the average up to like 230 or 240 or something like that. Or, you know, he's getting there.
I think it's 227.
I knew it was close to 230, something like that. But he was in the low twos, like even high ones, you know? So,
yeah. Well, all of a sudden, like you mentioned, you know, Marsh is hitting 353. He's leading the National League in batting average, or all baseball in batting average.
All baseball, yeah.
And then Schwarber's tied for first. Harper's tied for seventh, which is better than I think we had thought. Mm-hmm. You know, like, Adolis is hitting the ball hard.
The power isn't like there, but I agree. I like the at bats. Like I don't think he looks lost, anything like that. And the average, I mean, him hitting like close to 250 is for him really good. It's just strange that he has not been able to get that power going.
I am surprised he's a 700 OPS.
Right?
I mean,
and it's all because of the slugging, you know?
I know. Because we've obviously watched every game of his. He feels more like at least 750.
More impactful. I agree.
Yeah. So maybe the heart. He also might be one of these guys that hits the ball hard, but happens to be at people. And the numbers don't totally reflect how you feel about Adolis. It was good to see him just absolutely launch one. Was it against the A's?
Yeah.
The center field, rather than the wall scrapers that he thinks are mm-hmm. are further than they are. No, but the swing adjustment they've made with him. And listen, I've been very anti Kevin Long, but I think there's some things that he deserves credit for here.
Marsh. Yeah.
Marsh, he deserves credit for. Adolis, the swing change, he deserves credit for. Boehm keeps talking about the adjustments, and it does look like he is trying to lift it a little
Saturday
bit.
Saturday was a good day for him, but yeah.
Yeah, he got an RBI yesterday. Beat out a ground ball.
Elmo saved the season, right? You can thank Elmo.
Yeah, who'd have thought? Oh, well, listen, I think if the Mets can do the stupid Grimace thing, we can
agree.
We can
almost
have
way cooler than Grimace anyway. So,
are you kidding me?
Come on.
You know, I haven't gotten Walker into Sesame Street yet.
You got to. It's amazing.
I know. It's a staple.
Kids, there is a wild thing with the Elmo thing where kids just are drawn to Elmo. Like, when Zoe was like, you know, three, four, five, really into Sesame Street. And it's just wild. They just freaking love Elmo. It's, you know,
we'll get there. We'll get there. So, so you feel good about those two in the middle of the lineup. Boehm, we'll see, but like showing signs of life. It was good to see him hit two out. And the guy who I think is about to go on a run is Stott. I know.
How many times have we said this?
Come on, man. Come on. Well, here's the difference in what's going on with Stott right now that I think is really interesting. So if you watch him, he's kind of changing as a hitter right in front of our eyes. He's turning into he's attempting to turn into a lift and launch slug guy, which I'll take. Like, I appreciate
over the noodle, you know, bat. Yeah.
Oh, over swinging a pool noodle. What are you crazy? So if you look at it, so heading into the weekend, I think it was like last Thursday, and he just missed one yesterday that Beck made a crazy play on. That was awesome. But if you look at some of his numbers, like his pull air percentage, which I know you're a huge fan of.
Love it.
Is 21%, or it's like, it's now 19.
I don't know what that means. You have to, give some context for everyone.
It's pretty simple. Pull air percentage.
Terms of what are good numbers? I get like that percent you pull it in the air, but the point is like, what are you looking for? What is a good pull air percentage number?
Okay.
You
know right now he's running about 20% pull air percentage, which is in the red. It's not like bright red. Well, and it's not like, it's not like I can say like, I want every hitter to be a pull in the air guy.
Right, but no, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I think there's value to it, but it's up from like 10%. So he's clearly making concerted effort to do that. You look at the hard hit rate, and again, heading into the weekend, I looked at it last Thursday. He's running a 61% hard hit rate.
Wow.
Which is in the red. It's in the red. Not like super in the red, bright red, but in the red. It was 8%. He's the 8th percentile last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a stunning difference.
Yeah. So, and it checks out. I mean, it was.
Eye test backs it up, no doubt.
It was a lot of weak fly balls to left field last year. So you look at hard hit rate, you look at barrel percentage, you look at, you know, pulling the ball in the air more. And I think he's starting to get more comfortable with it. I mean, he is like letting the bat handle go and trying to launch the ball. And maybe this is we're monitoring this. We're monitoring these situations up and down the minor leagues into the major leagues. They're all trying to get behind the baseball. It really feels that way. And boom, making a little bit of concerted effort to get behind the baseball. Stotter, a concerted effort to get behind the baseball. JT looks like he's making a little concerted effort to get behind the baseball. There's good developments here. There's good developments here, Seltzer. And then you get the Crawford at the bottom, who is perfect. Like, I just let him
Crawford's play. Been good, man. Again, he had that little lull, and he's been good again. I mean, I think he's up to like 287 or something like that. Yeah. I think he has the fourth or fifth highest OPS on the team. Yeah, Crawford's been good. Let's get to the one more guy, and then we'll get to pitching and stuff, but a weird weekend for him. Had a big game, had a 0-for-10 or 11, whatever it was. Trey Turner has been all over the place. What was that? Yeah. Four hit game, over the weekend as well.
Four
hit
game Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, 0-for-6. Like, he's been obviously inconsistent and more bad than good. Any signs for optimism with Turner? Where are you at with Turner? Cause he really is such a swing guy for this team. I mean, if you have especially if Marsh is going to step up, you know, if you've got Crawford doing what he's doing and Stock can be a little better, I mean, Turner can be that guy who can turn it into a real offense. Like, you need Turner to be good.
Yeah. And, you know, Saturday was good. It looked like he was backspinning the baseball a little bit, which was a more positive sign. They weren't all fake hits. They were real. They weren't like infield. It was a little concerning that one of a scout talked to Nightingale and said that they're legitimately concerned about Trey. Right. So, you know, but the other
me
thing,
me too, pal, me too.
The thing that just stinks is, man, why are all of their best hitters left-handed? Because I would love to have Crawford 9. Marsh should be batting leadoff against righties at least. So sure. If you go Marsh, Schwarber, Harper, that's like a million lefties in a row.
Yeah, you set up for later in the game, you're in trouble. Yeah,
which is a disaster. I like in my head, I know that Marsh should just stay at 5 because it makes sense. You go Turner, Schwarber, Harper, Adolis, him. But at the same time, he's hitting 353. So I would like that at the top of the lineup, yeah. Especially when our leadoff hitter is hitting, what, 230?
Somewhere
around there. So, but I also don't know. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it unless you went Marsh, Turner, Harper, Schwarber. But I also don't want that because yeah. I want Schwarber having more at-bats and I want Harper having, well, Harper's same spot, but you get the point. So I'm almost just like, ride it out with Trey and hopefully heats up and he gets going here. And he's so stop and starty. I feel like he's always been stop and starty as a Philly, really. Besides last year, he kind of kept it together. And it's funny. He said he took 350 swings before the game on Friday. Like, it seems like he's like annoyed, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Those quotes were, yeah, for sure.
And then he had zero
and swings. Like frustrated and, you know, kind of confused by it even, I would say,
And he's trying to work his way through it, which you appreciate, but also maybe he needs a little boom, a 2-day reset.
Yeah, for serious. Yeah. Cause we've seen this with Turner. I mean, he is clearly a guy who puts a ton of pressure on himself. He just is he is, we've heard it, we've seen it. And he is clearly someone who really works in the cage and works on his swing and all that. And it almost feels like, to your point, like, it's just, he's overthinking it. He's doing too much. Like, I think he needs kind of just a day away or whatever, but it's just, he is so important. Like, I mean, we talk about him and Boehm and obviously, you know, those right-handed bats and Garcia too, but like him and Boehm having been here and part of this, like they have to make it go. Like, they have to be the complement to the lefty bats that are hitting. And it's just, it's frustrating because it feels, especially with Turner, like, you know, the Boehm thing is just what it is. He's frustrating. He is the player he is. He'll be gone next year. But maybe. The Turner thing, you know, with the contract and the years left and the importance of it, and also what that contract prohibits you from doing with other guys, you know, it's the Trey Turner thing is really the biggest question mark for me right now moving forward in terms of like what this team can be.
Yeah. I mean, I hear that. They have survived with him being like this, you know, in the past, but they're not going
to
win.
To win the World Series, man. You know, they're not, they will not win the World Series with the righty bats doing this. They just won't. Like, we've seen in the playoffs too much, especially, and I love Marsh and I believe in Marsh, but like, we can't say for sure Marsh will be awesome in the playoffs, attack a lefties, attacking him, all that type of stuff. It just, they have to, at least one of those two guys has to hit for them in the playoffs. Has to.
Yeah. Yeah. And Marsh, I'm really happy for Marsh. Marsh is a great dude. And he's been really good for an extended period here. He also has been a massive disappointment in the postseason.
Yeah. I mean, even last year, we talk about the you know, the stats going around. It's awesome. But the numbers from May 1st, we had the horrible April. And then from May 1st last year, he's been one of the best hitters in the sport. But that doesn't include the playoffs, which happened in there, where he was a disaster again, you know, and he is, it's one of those things where because of the lefty thing, and you know, it's nice to see him bat against lefties more, that he needs the reps, he needs to get better at it. But when you get to the playoffs and you're facing, you know, teams that are more willing to bring lefties into spots, more willing to be aggressive, and you're facing better lefties who are, you know, max efforting and all that, like, it's a tough spot for him.
Oh yeah, I mean, you're not facing the A's and the exactly. and the Rockies
exactly, yeah,
in the playoffs, yeah. Now I do think that the biggest thing that's happening with Marsh right now is, you know, he's kind of talked about it a lot, but he's dumbing this whole thing down. And I think when you watch him go play, it, and I know this is going to sound simple, but it looks like he's just playing
versus
thinking. Yeah. In a way. And I think
the trade thing, we were just talking about it.
I think that's the biggest difference between him and Trey is that, like, Marsh got sent down last year, and really since he's come back, it's been way more, I'm just going to do me. And I think he's been talking to Schwarber a lot about how to hit lefties, because, like, the way he talks about hitting lefties is exactly the way that Schwarber talks about hitting lefties.
Well, it's smart, right? I mean, yeah. Look how much better Schwarber has made himself here in Philly hitting lefties.
And he's obviously, he's earned the ability to face left-handed pitching.
Yeah, he has to be in it. He has to be. He's too good a hitter right now. Not too. I mean, what are we going to put Otto Kemp in there again? Bring him back up for Reyes? I mean, these guys stink. Like, it's not like they have a better chance against left-handed pitching, you know?
Come on, man. Quad A Kemp.
Quad A Kemp.
No, come on, man. He's ripping the ball AAA again, for usual. He's got to be going crazy. He's down there like, are you kidding me?
I know.
He probably wishes he was down there playing bad. I mean, he probably is like, I don't know.
At least don't have to think about this. Yeah,
I don't want to go down here and have an 1100 OPS again and then call it back up. But yeah, no, the Marsh development is huge. And I wish they could move him up the lineup. I don't know where you do it. I don't know where you do it. I don't know how you do it. And the next thing that comes in is, are we extending Brandon Marsh?
Which is only a year and a half away. It's a fascinating thing. And look, it is wild with the Boehm stop Marsh thing, you know, the daycare when they were the group of guys who kind of been here, and obviously Boehm and Stott through the system, but have kind of grown up on the team together. I don't think anyone would have guessed that Marsh would easily be the best of the three of them. Like, it is a surprise. And look, I'm not going to take too big a victory lap, but just go back and look at the spring training stats for Alec Boehm, Bryson Stott, and Brandon Marsh.
Yeah.
Marsh was horrible, horrible in spring.
Yeah. That's fine. They don't tell the whole story.
I had to get one in.
You know who was horrible in the spring and who's been horrible this year? Trey.
That's true. Yeah, you're right.
So,
all right, let's get to the pitching side of things. Then we'll get to the bag and the minor league minute and all that stuff.
Oh, come on, man.
Oh, that's what everyone's waiting for. Thank God we can talk about a major league team and not be upset about it.
You can't reason with the sun. Trust us, we've tried. This summer, it's time to put that angry ball of fire on mute. Columbia's OmniShade technology is engineered to protect you from the sun's harsh rays that can burn and damage your skin. The sun is relentless, but so is our gear. Level up your summer at Columbia.com to spend more time outside and less time slathering on aloe lotion. You're welcome. Columbia, engineered for whatever.
Some follow the noise. Bloomberg follows the money. Because behind every headline is a bottom line. Whether it's the funds fueling AI or crypto's trillion-dollar swings, there's a money side to every story. And when you see the money side, you understand what others miss. Get the money side of the story. Subscribe now at Bloomberg.com.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
The pitching this weekend. You mentioned Lizardo. How concerned are you about the up and down knee? Because like we have seen the at times Lizardo we saw last year, he has had some brilliant outings this year, but he really has been way more inconsistent than at any point last year, much less early in the year.
Yeah, so I could tell in five pitches that it was going to be a long one for Lizardo on Friday. Just immediately came out and didn't have command. So I was up in the Lake Wallen Paul Pack area.
Look at you.
Celebrating my buddies. We have a little bachelor party thing. So I did bring my phone to the bar to.
You wouldn't be you if you didn't.
So I was watching the game. We found a place that had Sixers Knicks on, which is impressive. And given the area, because it's like around Scranton, there were Knicks fans in there. So that was funny. So I was like watching the game on my phone, getting progressively more annoyed as the night was going on. Maybe this is who Lizardo is. I'll always just continue to bet on the upside and the high moments are the high moments. And he's just never going to, he might not have the consistency that a Sanchez can have, where Sanchez can just, and man, he is.
What a king. He's back. He's back. He looks amazing.
He's so far and away my favorite Philly. It's not even funny. I love him so much. And you can tell he's back by, what was it? Was the third inning when he had second and third no outs and just got out of it.
And the last start against the A's, like the sitting in the bottom of the seventh for like whatever 30 minutes or whatever it was, then I was shocked, man. I know he didn't have a time. I was shocked he brought him back out.
Cool,
and just deals. Like it was, he is looking phenomenal, and he looks like he was last year after that like weird hit barrage over a few starts.
What have we talked about at nauseam on this podcast? He ditched the slider. I mean, Hamill said it yesterday during the game. I think he's thrown three or four sliders heading into the seventh. And then he started throwing it more a third time through just to give them a different look be a tendency breaker. But the fastball and shape, like I know there's this thirst to you feel like you need three pitches if you want to succeed at the major league level. But he is such a unicorn from what he can do with those two pitches that it doesn't matter. They're the same pitch out of hand and they have no idea which one it is. And they just have to guess every single time. He's impossible. And he's down to a 2.11, like just like that. Mm-hmm. He's just a treat. I love him. But Lizardo, like he's just missing that level of consistency. And he doesn't have the same kind of command. Like I think this is just going to happen with him. Like he's going to just be off and it's going to be a horrible outing. And he's going to allow six runs in five innings, and then the next time he's gonna go seven shutout. Like that's
he's really, when he's off, he's off, when he's on type of guy.
Last year he was on a lot more than he's off.
He only had a few start. It was really those like couple, that little two in a row and then like one other start and that was it.
Yeah And even that Mets start, he allowed four and then retired what, 20 some straight,
22 straight, like
it's definitely annoying. You give him credit for coming back and fighting. Mm-hmm. And the Crawford moment was awesome. I was asleep on the couch for that one. I was sitting there and then went a little horizontal. I was watching on my laptop and then I fell asleep. But I did rewatch the next day and got infuriated when all they over again. Yeah,
it was so brutal. I was so excited when they came back too, because we had a Zoe school like fundraiser thing. And I was watching before we left, came back, it's 7-2. I throw it on. I'm like, all right, it's 7-2. I was following my phone. I'm like, okay. And then they just start coming back and I'm sitting there. I'm like, this is lovely. This is great. And then.
Well, and listen, I think Mattingly's done a great job with a lot of the small ball situations. And there's some things I want to detail that I saw over the weekend that I loved. Get the bunting station back out. And I want Trey on it. I want JT on it. And all the guys he says that don't have experience doing it, I freaking do it. I don't care.
Just, it's insane that Trey can't and doesn't bunt. It's insane. Like, that profile as a player, like, yes, exactly. You're hitting 230 and you're super fast. Like, this is crazy. You should have a bunt in your bag as a tool regardless. Like, it should just be something you have in your bag, you know?
I don't think either one has laid a bunt down since 2018. I believe that that is the...
That is a wild stat.
Well, and especially when you get... Like, Kirkering has that great inning. And Kirkering looks phenomenal.
He looks great. He was awesome there. Fired up. It was awesome to see, you know, that was cool.
The biggest thing with Kirkering, and we'll get back to it, but the biggest thing with Kirkering this year is he has also developed a bleep you kind of attitude. I think what happened in LA.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's interesting.
Could have been the best thing for his career. Could have been the best thing for it because he's developed a way more. I don't give a
well,
crap.
Well, when you, it's the, this quote always gets brought up and it's a great one, but that Howie Roseman after 2015 and comes back in 2016, he said, you know, something to the effect of, once you've been dead, you got nothing to lose. And it's like, that's kind of the same type of idea where Orion Kirkering has experienced the worst possible moment you can have on a baseball field, maybe outside of Mitch Williams. You know what I mean? Like as bad as it gets, especially because it was such a, you know, his own gaffe. It wasn't just a bad pitch. It was his gaffe. Like, once that happens, if you can move past that, like, how could anything feel worse? Like, you go on a field, you're like, well, it won't be as bad as that. I've already had the worst. You know, that has to be, in some ways, I would think, for the right type of person, a freeing thing.
Yeah. The next step for him I need to see is I do need to see someone hit the ball back to him and he throws the ball
in
first base.
Desperately. I just need it. Yes.
I'm sure
he doesn't need it, but yeah.
Well, the first play of his season is a little dribbler back to him. And
then none since, I don't think. It's hilarious. I think there might have been one. Yeah. But yeah.
But he didn't go for it. But no, he looks like he's developed the cockiness that I think you need if you want to be a shutdown late inning reliever. Especially in extra innings, when you get out of it in the top half of the inning with it being a tie game, just bunt him over and get him in.
So every single time, unless Schwarber's at the plate or Harper's at the plate, I want every other player bunting in that situation. Other player.
I'm probably telling Harper to let it bunt.
I might. You're not wrong. Like,
Schwarber, I'm not. Schwarber, I'm definitely not.
Just go swing, buddy.
But, it's so frustrating because that should have been a win. That should have easily been a win.
I totally agree. It should have been. And they should have swept. They don't do that, though.
No, they should have swept. And this is in the take bag, but we're here. There's a lot of things that annoy me about Brad Keller. But on top of his 94-mile-an-hour changeup that has no chance at the strike zone, if he could please ditch Imagine Dragons as your walking. Oh my, you want to talk about having like no aura or absolutely. I think the other team gets motivated by how lame it is when they hear, give whatever it takes. Like, what are we doing? Like, get a real walkout song. Imagine Dragons. Wonder you can't find the strike zone. No wonder you're he is
frustrating.
He might be as soft as a marshmallow. I don't get it. You throw 98, you have a great sweeper. Last year with the Cubs, I mean, he was
awesome.
He was ridiculous with the Cubs. He allowed one earned run after the All-Star break. One. That's he nuts. Freaking comes here and you're watching him with your hands over your eyes when every time he comes in. Doesn't have a clutch gene, has to allow a run first before realizing he has 98 in his back pocket. Stop with the 94-mile-an-hour changeup, get it over the zone, throw it in 88, and let's get this thing back on track. Because guess what? I mean, with the way Kirkering's throwing and with the way that Bolin looked yesterday, who I don't know what they did, and I don't know what the injury was or whatever, but I think they worked on something on his lower half. Because he looked way more explosive. All of his stuff took an uptick yesterday. His induced vertical break on his four seamer was 19. 19?
That's amazing.
I mean, oh my goodness. Like, I don't know what to do with Bolin, but Bolin, that was ridiculous what we saw yesterday. So holy cow, Brad Keller. I mean, get rid of Imagine Dragons. You have good taste in music. I've seen you walk in. You ask what you're listening to. You say Childers and you say Zach Bryan. So you got some feel for the musical spectrum. Get rid of Imagine Dragons and turn into the lockdown reliever that we thought we had and let this bullpen just kind of eat for a little bit.
There you go. I like that. It's all about the music. All right. Take bag in a sec, but on the way into the take bag, and I don't know if there's too much to say.
We have an event on Thursday.
Oh, yeah. But thank you. Yes, I was going to get there. But yeah, let's just say that right now. I was actually going to mention Aaron Nola, but Thursday in Philly, the Garage Rittenhouse. So it is the Garage in Rittenhouse. We are going to be there for the Phillies and Sox, Red Sox action. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. Come hang out with us. We'll have trivia, Miller Lights, giving away tickets. It's going to be freaking awesome.
Am I asking my trivia questions again this year?
You better. Yeah, buddy. Yeah, can't let me do it all. I mean, yeah, come on.
Get my sicko questions in the holster.
Yeah, that's the best. And it goes silent. And then it's like,
room dies.
It's so good. It's so awkward. And I love, you'll just stand there. You have no problem just letting them, you know, sit
like,
there.
I like seeing, nothing quite like seeing the room die.
I know.
It's lively. Everyone's having a good time. And then it's, hey, who the Phillies trade Chase Utley for? I know. Oh, you don't know Darnell Sweeney? Like, what, are you crazy?
Come on. All together.
Who do they trade DJ Rumfeld for?
Ooh, no idea.
Nick Nelson and Donnie Sands, I believe.
Well, look at that.
DJ Rumfeld was nasty at Virginia Tech. And yeah, he's Philly's farm man. Yeah, he's an intriguing little first base bat. You want to talk about Nola?
Sure. I mean, had a good start prior to the only one, and then, you know, kind of back to being Nola. They won, but back to
Nola. Listen. Three runs over five innings.
Yeah, I think it was 4 2/3.
Dude,
yeah.
And how about Donnie getting him out of there? I was
impressed.
I was getting ready to give a standing O, frankly. I was from my couch. I stood up and started clapping. I was like, look at that. I appreciate the proactiveness in which Don Mattingly is
me too.
Getting guys out of games before it goes haywire. I do think that's something that he picked up from John Schneider, because this has not been the MO of Don Mattingly.
No, ever. Oh my God, at all. Yeah.
Ever. I think he's taken a lot from the Blue Jays. It really does seem that
good. Schneider's a good manager, so I'm good with that.
But no, so yeah, I mean, him
and
getting
Shapiro is a good organization, right? Like they're a good organization, the Blue Jays.
100%. So, but getting him out of there and knowing that he had a light pen that day, now he could have gotten screwed if he ended up pitching Kirkering anyway, because he could have been two innings of Shugart, who, by the way, big Chase Shugart guy. He's not,
you know it. I love Chase. I'm fully in on Chase Shugart.
96 mile an hour sinkers at the top of the zone that move like a foot. So knowing that he had a light pen, but feeling that that was just too important of a moment in the game, I thought was really, really good and really, really an aggressive move that I liked. The problem with Nola was that, I mean, it was vintage from the standpoint of he was down, 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 and then he'd go up, and it was fun. When he is trying to be down and it leaks up, it just gets blasted. I mean, that's just been the story of Aaron Nola really since 2018. So it's not anything new. I do think that he is trying to throw, you know, more first pitch curveballs to get hitters off the fastball. But I mean, his fastball is getting tattooed right now. The four seamer at a rate that he's never seen before. So yeah, I mean, at this point, he's a four. Just
is what it is. Yeah. He's a five, really. Yeah.
He's a five if Painter can figure it out.
Yeah. He's a five in general, but yeah, four here.
Yeah, four. He's a four here. It is pretty jarring looking at the, like, they've been good starting pitching wise.
The numbers. I know the ERAs and stuff. It's like, whoa, look at that. Like Painter and Nola to Lizardo. It's like, geez,
dude, Lizardo's at a
5.98. I know. It's nuts, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. But they are pitching better.
Yeah. No, they are. Yeah.
And I mean, it's a really big Painter start tomorrow. Well, massive. I don't know. It's not like the end of the world, but
no, but you want to see, look, he is a 23-year-old kid pitching in the majors for the first time. Like you don't want him to spiral. You don't want him to get on a spot where he is not confident and not trusting his stuff and all that. Like, I think if you keep getting hit up, they could have to send him the minors. You know what I mean? Like, so I think it's a big start for him. Not in terms of like, oh, his career or whatever, but in terms of him being able to help this team this year, like he needs to have some success and build some confidence and keep himself in the majors.
Yeah. And I think that to his credit, it seems like he's handling it pretty well. I mean, Mattingly said he wanted to keep going out there and, which you appreciate, but he also got to start seeing some results. I think they've tinkered with his four seam a little bit to get some better action on it. So we'll see if it, I mean, obviously I think he might've been tipping a little bit in that last start because
they were all over him. They were all over him.
I mean, Rooker hit a ball that was basically at his, that,
but so did Langoliers. The Langoliers one was like a moonshot, just kept going, you know?
No, but yeah, but the Rooker pitch was like at his belt.
Oh, you're talking about the pitch itself. I was talking about the actual. Yeah. The Rooker pitch was a horrible pitch.
I mean, it was out. I think he set up outside. He missed it by a foot. But like to be able, I don't know. I don't think major league hitters, I give them a lot of credit in a lot of senses. But being able to just be that on 97 in feels a little fishy to me. So maybe he was tipping. Maybe he wasn't. We'll see. But the issue continues to be, obviously, the fastball has not returned to pre-TJ levels, and we'll see if it ever does. But the off-speed just is not – it's Wheeler-ish, where the off-speed is quality if the fastball is elite, and the fastball is not elite, and then the secondaries aren't as crisp. So the biggest thing he has to work on is, like, honing in and sharpening up all of the secondaries if his fastball is never going to return, which we'll see if it ever does. But maybe he's a three. Maybe he's three.
Great. Let's pray that fastball returns. All right, let's take Baggett.
Okay, so what else? The migraines thing. I've never
weird,
seen
weird, right? Three guys now, right?
Three migraines.
What's going on?
I don't know. But I also don't know if you can just figure out migraines, but they need to figure out the migraines.
It's really strange. Really
a lot
strange.
Of migraines. A lot of migraines. We are on Ty Cobb. Well, we got to take him down with the BABIP.
Marsh is going for Cobb now.
Yeah. 370 some career BABIP for Marshy, and Ty Cobb's 383.
It's so unbelievable. It is the most absurd top five like stat. Like it's just such a ridiculous grouping. It's him and four Hall of Famers. Like high level.
It's Ty Cobb, Brandon Marsh, and Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Yeah, I believe it's the top three. Yeah, it's crazy. Three,
which
yeah.
is. Amazing. I guess
Shoeless Joe, not a Hall of Famer, Hall of Fame worthy. Yes,
of course. Yes. I mean, the thing has always been, if he could just put the ball in play,
yeah,
good things happen. And the biggest thing that I like about Marsh's season so far is he's running a 19% K rate. I mean,
wow.
Last year he was 25, which was good. And then the years before he was like 32, 30, all in the 30s. And right now he's running a 19%
K rate.
That's
phenomenal.
He might finally be turning into Johnny Damon. He might finally be turning.
Good comp, actually. That's a really good comp. I could see that.
With the hair.
Yeah.
And the home runs and the left field defense.
Left field thing. Yeah. That's pretty good. I like, dude, that's pretty good.
We'd love him to turn into Johnny
Damon. Now, if he could be a winner like Johnny Damon was, that would be cool for us, too.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so some little things that I did notice that I thought was really interesting. Well, not really interesting. It was actually just playing baseball the right way. And
which is interesting when they don't do it for a while. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, not getting bunts down and not winning on Friday, that was bad. That was bad for the Donnie Baseball brand. But on Saturday, when Sosa grabbed second after Marsh hit the sack fly to right field, and forced him to cut the ball, and then he still got to second base. I feel like I see teams do that on the Phillies all the time because the Phillies never throw the right base, it feels like. Now, under Donnie Baseball, they probably do throw the right base more often.
Yeah.
But it was refreshing to see, hey, force the throw. You get the throw home. Force them to cut it so you make sure you score the run. And then you take second base.
Yeah.
That's the little things. And then the other thing, and I'm not sure if it was on purpose, but like if I ever coach Little League, or if I ever coach, you know, Legion.
Say
like,
when you coach Little League, let's come on.
Well, the schedule currently would make it pretty tough.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
I would love to do what Stott did on Saturday with a runner on second base, where he baits the throw to second, and as the ball goes, he's already on his way to third base.
And
the ball is in the center field. You steal a run. That's demoralizing for the other team. You're taking advantage of a young team in the Rockies. So I thought that was impressive. And I like that as well.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And then for the true iHopes fans and the sickos out there, they did claim Jackson Rutledge off waivers.
I got the email.
And that was exciting. Now, he's the ERA for the Nationals this year. It is about 47.
Is that bad?
Yeah, so not great.
Not 4.7, 47.
He was my draft crush.
I remember.
I want to say 2021, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But he's a JUCO kid, big fastball. A lot of levers there. He's huge, but he throws in the upper 90s like everyone else does.
And, yeah,
and it's an intriguing little lad. I mean, his career minor league ERA is in the threes, so there has been some success there, but obviously he's not put it together. We'll see if Cotham and crew and Cotham and Co. and Cotham City can
Cotham City is phenomenal.
Can work with him because there obviously is real stuff there. But they do need AAA starting depth. So we are
all agree. I mean, they do though. Like honestly, they need major league starting depth in reality. I mean, you know, if we talk, like I just mentioned the idea of if Painter doesn't, you know, he keeps struggling at this level, he could get sent to the minors. He could, but like, I don't even know what they bring up to take his place. Like they don't have guys, right? Like, and you've talked a lot about like low minors. They got some dudes, you know, they got some guys to be excited about, but in the high minors, they're really, really light.
No, and even at the double A level, their next closest starters are like prospect wise, is probably Mavis Graves at Jersey Shore, just from the standpoint of being like ready. I mean, everyone else, I mean, Chuck King is kind of pitching all right for the Iron Pigs, but I mean, no, you don't want to do that.
That's far away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Gabrish got lit up this week.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is $2.50, so you can get your gym gains on, or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. All right. So the minor league minute.
Call it minor league minutes. I feel like.
Well, I only have three guys to talk about.
Okay. All right. Love it.
So this guy might be behind Gage as the second best pitching prospect.
Ooh.
in the system. And that is Ramon Marquez.
Wow.
Who is, you know how, you remember peak Devin Williams with the airbender?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
He has that.
Really?
So he does. And he's 95 to 97 now in his first start. He struck out nine. He struck out nine in four innings the other day. Now, I don't know how into the game the Daytona Beach Tortugas were because
the Tortugas.
Because wait for this. They had a doubleheader on Saturday and it was a rain delay in the first one. And the game was supposed to start, I think, at 4:30, and it didn't start until 7:30. And then they played a second game after that. So that second game didn't start until
10:30. Oh my god.
10:30. Wow. 10:30. So I don't know how into the game the Tortugas.
I'm shocked they played that. Like, that's wild.
I think they had to because they didn't want to do it the next day. Because
they didn't want to give up the gate, I guess. Yeah, it's crazy.
One, they wanted to get out of there, on Sunday. So it was hilarious to try to follow along.
It's nuts.
Yeah. Now they play seven-inning doubleheaders, so it's not as egregious. But Ramon Marquez, if he is 95 to 97, he has that changeup. And that changeup to single-A hitters has to be the toughest pitch that they've probably ever seen in their lives. So he's really awesome. He's really awesome. Brad Pacheco for Clearwater is really, really pitching well. He's got some power stuff. Those are the three interesting ones. Fisher's not even lower.
Yeah, I know. I'm just talking about guys who could be something down the road.
And then Bauker threw four innings of relief yesterday. He struck out 37 in 20 innings. So wow. Yeah, Bauker's.
Now you know what hurt them? The Chassé injury hurt them.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Because he was someone who was moving up and looked like he could maybe, you know, be a guy for them. You know, certainly. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ramon Marquez, file that one away. Farabus, by the way, is smoking the ball still.
He got hit on the Farabus.
He got hit in the wrist and it looked like a bad one because he went right down. But he came back and had four hits on Sunday.
So I guess he's okay.
He's had in a four game. In this series in Daytona Beach, he had 11 hits.
Wow.
So I don't know how long they can keep him there. His OPS over 1,000. So, you know, how long they can keep him there to get him to Jersey Shore. He is far and away the next most interesting catcher in the system because we're all looking for the JT replacement one day. I wish I had a better feel for how he is behind the dish. I don't really notice anything. He seems fine. I don't think it's the Tait situation where he's just a DH. I believe he can stick behind the dish legitimately, but Farabus is awesome. And then there's Griffin Burkholder.
Yes.
Like, dude. All right. I need like, all right, 1 second.
Yeah, buddy. It's all yours.
I really like Dante Norris. And I like some of the other hitters in the system. For my money, peak of their powers, like the best prospect behind Aiden Miller when they're going is Griffin Burkle.
Wow.
He is, because he's a combination of everything. Like, he's super fast. He can legitimately play center field. Norrie can as well. Norrie's super fast. But he hits the ball hard. And he had 9 hits in his last 4 games. And 4 of them were doubles and 2 of them were home runs.
Let's go.
And they're trying to manage him as best as they can because he's had hamstring injuries and they're trying to be smart about it. But the Griffin Burkholder package that he can be, the tools that he has, I mean, that is a possible difference making prospect. I'm so happy he is starting to play better. He was hitting like 160 heading into the series. And before he got out in his last 2 at bats yesterday, he was up to 254.
Wow.
Like, just like Jesus. That. Yeah. And he jumped like a 750 OPS. Oh my goodness. Like, he has the total package. If he can just stay healthy, he has to stay healthy. But man, he's like mini Trout. He's mini Trout, but he also might have the Trout injuries. So we'll have to monitor that. But man, he is so intriguing. He's so intriguing. He hits the ball so freaking hard.
And right-handed, you know.
And he's right-handed.
Which would be nice, yeah.
Which they need. And if you remember correctly, you know, that they went a little under slot with Norrie and they went over slot with Burkholder. They gave him $2.5 million and like the 60-something pick in the draft. So yeah, the Threshers are just a treat. They're just a treat to watch. But Burkholder is very, very excited.
I love this. This is exactly what I want to hear.
He needs to stay healthy, but we are monitoring the Griffin Burkholder situation.
Love it. Love it.
All right. That's all I got.
Again, Thursday, Garage Rittenhouse for the Sox game. We'll be there for the whole game, hanging out. Chance to win Phillies tickets, trivia, hang out with us. Come on.
Listen, it's for the Sox game, but don't you worry. We'll probably pull some Redding game up on the phone.
Oh, you know Jack will pull up a Redding game on the phone.
We'll have the Threshers going. We'll get a second TV. Maybe get multiple TVs in buddy, there.
I like this. This is good work. Maybe we know someone who knows
throw
someone.
Throw some Threshers on. Let's get wild. We were at this bar on Friday night up in the Poconos.
Uh-huh.
And they had the Syracuse Mets on the TV.
No way.
It was a nice little touch.
Hey, I like this.
There's Jonah Tong. You know, he's a triple A. So yeah, dude, last thing, this is just a baseball discussion. I was looking up obviously the stats during the Don Mattingly era this morning.
Era, the 13 game era. Yes.
The Rays have a 1.35 ERA.
Yeah.
During this Rays tenure. Awesome. Their relievers have not allowed a home run.
That is nuts, dude.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough little stretch here. I mean, the Rays aren't a part of this, but it goes pitching wise. It goes Red Sox.
Oh, yeah, because they have the Pirates this weekend.
Red Sox, Pirates, Reds. If they face Chase Burns, good luck.
Reds have been good, too.
Reds are playing well. Who would have thought Tito would turn another team around?
Shocker.
Like that.
What a shock.
And then they go Guardians, Padres, Dodgers.
That's tough, man. That's tough. That's a stretch. And look, to the point, like I think, and we've talked about this, I think, you know, they made the Mattingly move, giving him a little runway to get going with the schedule. Now they can play some real teams, you know? Yeah. Not that the Red Sox have been great, but to your point, you know, they do have real pitching. Now, is Crochet still hurt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So but that's Rangers. Huge. Rangers pitching Sunday. Great. Rangers pitching Thursday. We'll see Ranger.
Oh, my God. All right. Now everyone has to come watch Ranger with us. We have to do this. That's going to be. Oh, gonna feel that one.
I know.
All right,
dude. Wait till they hit a little ground ball back at him.
Oh, and he's gonna nonchalant, just toss it over. Like, oh,
and he does it to
that.
Us.
Missed that.
He's so mean.
I'm happy he's doing well. I love that.
Yes,
guy.
Of course.
All right, we will be back later in the week, Thursday. Garage Philly Rittenhouse. There are 2 garages. It's the one in Rittenhouse coming out with us. It's gonna be awesome. There are 3 garages, Gordon Tucker. My bad. The Rittenhouse one. That's all that matters. All right. We'll see you guys then. Can't wait. Until then, he's Fritz and Seltzer.